This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk.
Maybe I can do this for me. Maybe I can just to prove to myself that I can do a hard thing. So I did the 100 days and then I thought I'll just go a little bit longer because I'm still not sure. You know, I haven't had this like rainbow unicorn moment, but I am feeling a little bit better. So I'm a little bit less angry. And then you had your Snowden event. And then I looked at the dates again on the calendar and I was like, oh, that takes me to 6 months. I thought, no, I'm not doing that. No, I'm not going to do 6 months. I can't do that. Summer's coming. All the time, every day. fight. And then I don't know what happened. I think it was someone in the community that convinced me to do the mountain. Like, I'm quite fit and I do lots of running and stuff. And I thought, the one thing I haven't done is climbed a mountain. So maybe I should do this. And if I do it by myself, I'm going to die. So let me do it with a group where there's somebody who knows what they're doing.
So and then you can I can die with us.
I can just die in a group. It'll be fun. They'll make a Netflix documentary about us. It'll be great.
This week's episode of Over the Influence, it's an absolute cracker, as you've just heard there. It is with Lauren, originally from South Africa, lived in Berkshire for many, many years. Oh, my word. I mean, where to start with this week's episode? Lauren is now approaching a year and a half alcohol-free. We talk about how she felt invisible as a mum with four young kids, you know, working in hospitality, and about identity, about how drinking made her feel. I think what's really, really important in this episode is it's Lauren's honesty. She acknowledges how hard it was when she stopped drinking, not in terms of removing the booze, in terms of how it made her feel. But she's got so much to share, so I need to stop talking and we need to get into this week's episodes.
Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, my name's Helen and I'm 10 years alcohol-free this year. I joined Over the Influence 4 years after I'd stopped drinking and I expected it was going to be a place where I could talk anonymously about my shameful secret. But what I actually got transformed me and really surprised me. I spent hours talking to like-minded people all over the world on Zooms about our wins and our struggles and realised being alcohol-free was something to be proud of, not be ashamed of. And then I became a Zoom host myself and I love every call, which is different and fascinating. I got amazing advice on the forums when I was struggling. And giving advice to others on the forums reminded me why I stopped drinking. I went on outdoor adventures at mountains and I met people in real life who I feel like I've known forever and I've had the most amazing deep conversations with them. I found actual real life friends and a brilliant supportive community of like-minded people all shouting the benefits of being alcohol free. Now, I'm happy to talk to anyone I know about how I'm gloriously alcohol-free and how much I gained by giving up one thing. If you have a voice in your head wondering if you should rethink your relationship with alcohol, then you probably should, and Over the Influence is an excellent place to start. I wish I'd had Over the Influence when I first stopped drinking, but I'm so grateful. It's a big part of my life now, which I wouldn't be without.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to this week's episode of Over the Influence. If only you could hear the shambles that goes on before this episode is polished and edited. There's been burping, there's been throat clearing, there's been
not from me. Oh, the throat clearing and the burping, not from me, I'd like to clarify.
Listen,
nice and early.
It's better out than in.
I was raised. Anyway.
Nobody else heard it. Moving on. Welcome to this week's episode. It's fab to have you listening. Thank you kindly. My name is Sharon Hartley. I am based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. I'm 51 years old now. I took a break from the booze when I was 44. A slap bang in the middle of my 40s. It was just before my 45th birthday and that's all it was ever going to be. Just a 90-day break to reset, to learn how to drink like a grown-up and do that thing they call Moderation. Anyway, don't get me started on that. That break turned out to be the best thing I ever did for myself, for my family, for my friends, basically for my life. And here we are, wanging on about alcohol, free life, sobriety, teetotal living, however you want to describe it, week in, week out. I drank too much. I drank like a fish far too quickly, and I did it far too often. And this year, I will be 7 years alcohol free. I don't bang on about it on my own. Ben Anderson, how are thee?
Hello, I'm Ben. I'm 36. I live in Liverpool. Husband to Jem, dad to baby Leo, who I think's made me ill again. He's two, and I'm just constantly ill. Yeah, just all the time. And I'm off work this week as well. That's even worse, isn't it, when you're ill and off work?
Because you've slowed down. That's what happens. You stop and then you get ill.
But I gave up booze nearly 5 years ago. Well, it'll be 5 years in the summer. And for me, it's life-changing. I will never, ever drink again because it's just, well, I'm just better. I'm a better guy all round. You know, I've banged on about it for years now on this podcast. Can you believe it, Shaz? Next month, we are 5 years old. As a podcast.
How? Absolutely
nuts.
It's a lot of talking, isn't it?
Absolutely
nuts.
It's
a lot of talking.
I'm not going to talk about me. Just in my intro, very briefly, I'm going to talk about South Africa, which is the native country of our guest today, the fabulous Lauren. Because, Lauren, we were talking, we'll come to you, Chaz will do the big intro in a sec, but we were talking on a mountainside about South Africa last year at some point on one of the many OTI adventures we go on. We were talking about the kind of drinking culture in South Africa. I just thought it'd be interesting to have a little look at our stats in terms of where people listen to this podcast. 51% of our listeners are in the UK. As you'd imagine, because, you know, you're very northern, Chaz. I'm originally from the Midlands, but now living in Liverpool. We're very British. But then 20%, one in five OTI listeners are American. Then it goes Australia, Ireland, Canada, New Zealand, Spain. Spain. You go, okay, Spain. They speak Spanish predominantly. Denmark. They speak Danish predominantly. France. Speak French. Germany. Netherlands. And then South Africa comes in at 12th. Only 0.4% of the OTI audience are listening in South Africa. And I just think that's interesting. And I wonder if that's partly because of a heavy drinking culture over there. We'll get to this with our fabulous guest, Lauren. But Shaz, you like to do the big intro, so over to you.
This week on the podcast, and we say it, and it sounds a bit corny, and it sounds a bit cheesy, but it's true. We love, love, love it when we have one of our own, one of our community members joining us to share their story. This week, it is Lauren, who is just coming up for a year and a half alcohol-free, originally from South Africa, as Ben has just touched on there, now living in rural Berkshire, darling. Lauren, I'm going to go in straight away, right? And I'm going to make no apology for this with my first question. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
You're ready?
Yes.
We go back a long way, Lauren, okay? We go back 17 months. And I remember you coming into this community. Now, excuse me for saying this. You had a face like a slapped arse. You moaned. You whinged. You said, this is rubbish. I'm not going to do it. What's this all about? And I thought, we've got a job on our hands with this one. And yet here you are today, lovely Lauren, 17 months alcohol free, zooming with OTI, connections up to the eyeballs and loving alcohol free life. Should we start with that, Lauren, about how you felt when you dipped your toe into the murky waters of sobriety?
I do think I remember calling you all liars. I remember that
you
bit.
Did.
Oh, I forgot that. Yes, you did.
Yeah. No, in the beginning I was like, they're making this up. It can't be, because I felt that awful, that depressed, that like, this is not fun. This is really hard. I'm not used to this. It can't be as good as they say it. Oh, I don't know what they're taking, but it can't really just be because they stopped drinking. So I found it really difficult. And I do remember listening on the Zooms and people saying, oh, I'm 3 weeks and I'm feeling amazing. And I'm like, listen, friend, I don't know what planet you're on, because I'm not feeling good at all. And it was like that for a really long time. And I just thought, oh, I just have to keep going. Just try, you know, to try and feel better. But yeah, so yeah, I think I did call you all liars. Yeah, it was hard, really, really, really hard.
And you know what, Lauren? I know I made a joke of that in the beginning, but I think it's so important to acknowledge it as a starting point that, you know, when we do start out doing this, wherever we have been at as drinkers previously, it's not easy for a million different reasons, is it?
I think especially if you're someone that's been drinking a long time and it's part of your life and your culture, and in my case, my job, my family, it's part of your identity. And to like challenge that and ask questions about it brings up a lot of stuff and makes you feel really unsettled and really raw. And, you know, you kind of, I don't know if this is a saying that you say, like sort of raw dogging life without your crutch. So I didn't feel great. No, I felt exhausted. I felt depressed. I felt frustrated, quite angry. Remember being angry quite a lot too. It was very hard, but it's something I knew I had to do. You know, I just knew I couldn't carry on the way I was. And I felt bad doing that anyway. So let's try the other hard, you know. So I just picked my hard and believed in what people, well, tried to believe in what people were saying and just kept doing what everyone told me to do, you know, like listen to the podcast, read the Quitlet, have my whys, you know, remember how bad I felt when I did drink. Not that I was like totally excessive. There's no park bench story or anything like that. From the outside, you probably wouldn't have noticed that there was anything really wrong or whatever. But I just wasn't very happy. And I used alcohol to kind of numb those unhappy feelings and deal with life like we all do, you know. So it was really hard in the beginning, very hard. I got there eventually.
Well, you didn't want to, right, how do I phrase this? So you were finding it difficult. And I know that, you know, the social side of it, the sleep, and there's loads of stuff that wasn't great for you at the beginning. But also, yeah. I remember having a conversation with you and you were just like, if I'm being dead honest, I just don't want to be a part of this. Like, I don't want to be an alcohol-free person. Do you remember that conversation?
I do remember that. And I was quite like sort of resentful of alcohol-free people. All these happy people were quite annoying. And I was cross that the thing I liked to do so much and that was so part of my life was a thing that was making me really unhappy. And to do this and go alcohol-free, I knew that this was like my last chance and that I was going to do it on my own because everybody around me drinks, you know, my husband, my family. So I had to choose and that was a difficult decision. So I wasn't very happy about it, but deep down in my stomach, I knew that something wasn't right and that I had to do this. And this was probably my last chance, you know, but I was very reluctant, had lots of chat in my head. I've got two people in my head, basically. I've got drunk Lauren and Lauren, and they're at each other a lot of the time. And, you know, I remember thinking, oh, I don't have anything in common with these people. They're not even South African, you know, they're just, you know, crazy English people that like climbing mountains. I don't understand half the things they're saying. Sometimes I have to stop them and say, what do you mean by that? You know, so it was difficult, you know, and I couldn't share it with anybody close to me because they wouldn't understand. So it was very difficult. Yeah. I wasn't happy on the journey in the beginning.
Mm. It's a very, very important point to make though. And I think, you know, I totally, and I can't remember exactly what I said to you on that mountainside when we had this conversation, but I imagine it was something along the lines of totally get where you're coming from. You know, I felt like that as well. And I did. I definitely, you know, we talk about it all the time on here. I don't look back on my drinking career and, you know, go, oh God, it's not all bad. You know, I can definitely look back and go, I had some great times when I was a drinker. But, you know, you have to come to that. You can't choose the bits from each life. You can't choose the bits that you like from drinking you. You can't choose the bits that you like from alcohol-free you and make this kind of weird hybrid. Like, for me, it's that Claire Pawley quote, once a cucumber becomes a pickle, it can never become can be a cucumber again. And exactly. I was like, I pickled my cucumber. And I'm annoyed at that.
Well, I definitely pickled my cucumber and I was angry as a snake in a shoebox, you know. Like, I was not happy that I'd, like, somewhere along the line, I don't know when, I'd crossed a line and, you know, I try to moderate. I try to do all these things, not drink in the week, don't drink wine, only have beer, like, you know, count my units, have water in between, for years and years and years and years. And I always ended back at the same point. So I knew that I'd crossed this invisible line. I don't remember if it was on one of your podcasts where someone said it's like an elevator and you can get off at different floors. And I think I just passed the right floor to get off, you know, because I know people do drink and then they can pull it back. But I just think I crossed that line and I was so angry about it. I was like, how did that happen? How did I not see it? How did I not like notice that it was happening? Because it's just so slow. It's just like one day you wake up and you go, shit, I'm having a bottle of wine a day, like while I'm cooking and doing homework and like ironing. You know, of course, everyone has a glass of wine while they iron and changing the linen, because that's so boring. I'm just going to have a glass of wine while I change the linen. And suddenly it's a part of everything. And you don't really see it at first until one day you realize, oh my goodness, you know, that's where I'm at. And you know, you if you really stop and think about it, you know that something's not right. You know, it starts to be that like worm in your brain. Yeah. So, but I was really cross about it. I was cross with myself, I think, because I let it sort of creep in like that so slowly. But you know, life's busy and you do things. I mean, I think we do a lot of it automatically. You know, things are crazy. I've got 4 children. It's a very busy house. You know, they're all talking at the same time. Dogs barking. You know, my stress levels are high. I feel overwhelmed. So I know exactly what will make me feel better. A nice glass of Malbec, you know, but then it's never just one, you know, it's two. And then you can think, oh, there's only that much left in the bottle. I'll just finish the bottle, you know, and then you wake up one day and you're like, oh my God, how did that happen? How did that happen? So it's hard. It was hard. Yeah. It was a hard realization.
What you've just said there is exactly what I've shared on this podcast a million times, Lauren. That whole, you're doing it and you're drinking and it's fine and you're in your 20s and then you're in your 30s and then you're busy and then you hit your 40s. And literally, like you, I went, when did that happen? You know, when did that bite me on the arse? When did it become normal to drink a bottle of wine a night, you know,
exactly,
minimum? And it is such a slow process and it is so insipid and it is at every turn and it is celebrated. And yeah, you know, it is, you refer in there to doing the chores and the jobs and it's like, oh, 5 o'clock till now, I'll have a glass of wine. I'll just have one, of course. I'm only going to have the one glass.
Of course.
Course.
You know. And we deserve Sharon. We deserve
that's it. That's
it.
Because, you know, you've earned it.
You've
and I'm
earned
doing
it.
That in inverted
exactly.
commas. And then it's not okay. And then you realise, you know, there is an issue. And at whatever level that issue may be, however you want to label it, if indeed you do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, and here we go again. This happens all the time now. I apologise. Maybe you'll get this as well, Lauren. My brain empties. I had a point that I wanted
well,
to
Well, you know, if you don't mind, I'll jump in because...
Yeah, no, please do.
I think
perimenopause, it is finest.
What's really, and which is why we're such a great team, Sharon, you will jump in when
Thank
I need
you.
I will always be
Thank
here
you.
For you, Sharon Hartley.
The dream team.
But in terms of like that, having that realization itself is difficult enough, isn't it? That, oh, right. Oh, yeah. Gotta do something about this. I think for some people, they do start this whole alcohol-free life thing and they absolutely do feel the benefits straight away. You know, for some people, they go, oh my God, my head's cleared. I'm just, you know, I feel like this. Da, da, da. But it. I think most people are kind of in the middle. It sounds like you were on the other side of it where it was really difficult. So you've made this difficult decision anyway. And then you start you know, right, I'm doing the right thing now. I'm becoming an alcohol-free person. And then you have this other realization, oh God, this is hard as well. How did you keep pushing through that, Lauren?
I think I felt so bad about myself. And it's that thing when you look in the mirror in the morning and you like look in your own eyes. And I didn't like what I saw. I turned into the person I didn't want to be. Like I used to think to myself, you know, what would like my 19-year-old say if they could see me now? And I don't think they would have been pleased. And I just thought to myself, there has to be more to me than a glass of wine. You know, because like every time it's my birthday or something happens, I get a card with a wine meme or whatever. You know, in every conversation about alcohol, my name comes up. So I started to really like, not like that, that was like my only identity.
That was your thing.
Either just, that was my thing.
Yeah.
And but then actually I didn't want it to be my thing anymore because it didn't sit well with me. You know, I'm a mum, I'm a wife, I do all these things, but I'm also me. And I think I lost that me. Like nobody saw me ever. You know, they put all these labels and stuff to me, but no one actually saw me. And I think that's one of the reasons I drank was because I was just invisible. So alcohol was just there, you know, and I mean, you've all got kids. They can be ruthless children, you know, demanding of you when you're exhausted. They are not interested if you've had a bad day or anything like that. So I think I just thought there must be more for me. I can't just be here to be a mum. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I love my kids, you know, it's very important. But I felt like I lost myself. And I started thinking to myself, you know, I'm going to be 50 soon. Is this all that I am? A mum and a wife, and I really like wine. Is that it? I have to have more to give. I have to have more to offer. So after like listening to podcasts and reading loads of Quitlets and hearing other people's story, I thought, I just have to kind of like go on this path just to see where it goes. And I still don't really know where that is, but I do feel more confident in myself. You know, I'm proud of what I've done. And I think every day you cross a day off. I know some people don't count, but counting is important to me. Every day I cross a day off, I felt that little bit better. You know, every milestone, I just felt a little bit stronger, a little bit better, and a little bit prouder. It's something to do with what's in between your ears. It's what's in your head. That part of me that nobody sees, that part of me started to kind of wake up a bit and get electricity in it again, you know, and so when I started to see those glimmers, I thought, oh, well, you know, let me just go a bit longer. And slowly, very slowly, it started to get easier and easier. And I think also, like Shaz often says in the podcast, if you've been drinking 20, 30 years, like a bottle of wine a day, it's, you can't expect it just to be brilliant.
Yeah, in 20 to 30 days, you know.
It's going to take time.
It's like, where's my money? But I want my money back.
Yeah.
Sorry, Lauren, you're just going to have to keep going.
I know. And then I do your early morning Zooms and you go, yep, I know it's shit, Lauren. Yeah, you just have to keep going. We're not really here to listen to you whinge. Just put your big girl pants on. Put your big girl pants
supportive.
On. Keep going.
Very
supportive.
No, but you'd everything go, yep. You said, Lauren, and I mean, everything you said in those early days, it was like, it was the same as me. I'd been there and done that. And I was like, yeah, textbook, Lauren's pissed off. She's angry. She's hating it.
Very
and it
cross.
Is a case of sucking it up and just keep going, because none of this will change overnight. If as an adult, you know, you've been drinking, not even daily, but if it's been part of your life for so long. I just want to come back to something as well you said, Lauren, about feeling invisible and drinking because of that. Was that like a sadness that you wanted to drink through, or did you feel that the alcohol made you more visible?
No, I think it was a sadness and like a little bit of a resentment maybe. With other people and other people's lives, or, you know, that some people have it easier. So you think, you know, so I would, you know, get everybody sorted and do the dinner and whatever. And then I'd really have nothing else to do. You know, my husband works late nights. He's in hospitality. You know, I just felt very alone. It started when my children were really little, when I had my first. Alcohol wasn't a big thing for me before I had kids, which sounds terrible. But when I had my first daughter, I got terrible postnatal depression. And before that, my husband and I had restaurants, we were in hospitality. So I had this really exciting, interesting life, and it's in Cape Town and it's wine country. And, you know, I did PR for wine farms and things. So it was really, I had a good, fun life. And then I had this baby, bless her. She's 21 now, but, and I was on my own at home with the baby who had colic, and my husband still had his lovely, amazing life. And then I got postnatal depression and I felt really awful, and they gave me medication, but I didn't like the medication. It made me feel odd, but in the evenings, I always had my glass of wine, and that was like my treat. And that was like my little taste of the life I had before, You know, it was like, oh, I can still have fun. I can still have my Sauvignon Blanc. I can still have a little connection with the old me, you know. And so I think that's where it all started, like as that treat, as that reward in the evening, you know. And all of my children had colic. So the evenings, I think I had PTSD between the hours of 4 and 9 because of screaming children. So it makes me sound like a terrible mother. I promise you, I'm not a terrible mother.
It doesn't, it doesn't, Lauren.
But, you know, I don't think in society people talk enough about young mums at home on their own with babies that are not easy. You know, you have, people have these babies that just sleep. My kids never slept and they just cried. I don't know why. And I just found it really hard because I was on my own. And then when I immigrated and I had 2 more children in the UK, then not only was I on my own, but I had no family. So it just got harder and harder and harder. So I think, you know, that's kind of like where it started, because I was a little bit overwhelmed and kind of lost in my life a bit, you know, and, you know, supporting my husband and all the things that he wants to do and running restaurants and pubs and things. It, you know, it was always for everybody else, doing things for everybody else, making sure everyone else was okay, working on other people's dreams, other people's goals. And then you come back to yourself, and it's in those quiet moments, you know, when it's just you and yourself, me, myself, and I. And that's when I'd have a glass of wine, you know, because that's what you do, isn't it?
As you said earlier, that's the reward, isn't
it? It's the reward, and it's still a part of my old self. Does that make sense? Like, it's that connection to the old me. So, yeah, I think that's what I did. Okay, I'm pleased to say they're mostly grown up now, and they don't cry as much.
It's a whole different set of problems, isn't it?
It's when different get crying. They do sleep.
When we first met you, like, Shaz has joked about it, but I remember talking to Shaz, but, oh, have you met that Lauren yet? You know, you're hosting different Zoom calls from South Africa. God, she's fun.
Oh, God.
You know, and it's like, if someone's hearing, like, you for the first time, like, obviously our community members know you, but if you've got a listener hearing your story, it's your no bullshit, just honesty. Sorry,
so honest.
I'm swearing.
So
I'm sorry,
honest.
I know we don't do that anymore, but I couldn't think of a better term. Like, it's just, you know, this is me. Take it or leave it.
Yeah.
Like, just, you know.
But that's a South African thing. We're pretty straight.
I love that. So, you know, you've been very straight with us and you were very straight with everybody. And we always encourage this, you know. Tell us how, like, yes, of course, in Over the Influence, we think it's more powerful to start something rather than stop something. I am starting my life as a non-drinker. I'm not stopping my life as a drinker. You give up one thing, you gain so much more. There's a lot of power in that kind of reframe. And I think that that's what the people who start something are the people that really keep us going for the long term. The people who stop something, white knuckle it, at some point your willpower runs out.
Doesn't work.
You know, it just doesn't work. But at the same time, we've got to be honest. You know, we've got to be honest about the difficult bits as well. Sorry, what were you going to say then?
I was going to say that about the white knuckling it. Like, you know, I tried to stop drinking many times, you know, do sober October, sober January, all the dry January. And I just couldn't stick with it because it was so depressing and it was so, you know, dull, and I didn't know what was on the other side. Like, I didn't know what I was like aiming for.
So that's when you're doing those months, Lauren, and I've done it again, I keep saying, it's just like me. For me, you were clinging on to start drinking again. So there was the end goal wasn't to actually see what a longer you know, a longer stretch without alcohol would be like. You know, that's why we say, don't we, Ben, in the community, go for 100 days, get into triple figures. Because, you know, when I did Dry Jan and Sober October, I knew damn well that at the end of that month, I was going to drink my body weight twice over because of everything I've missed out on. But you, as rubbish as it was in the beginning, you know, those first few weeks, those first few months, and, you know, Ben talked about this before, you just kept going because it was like, oh, this is rubbish, but I just need to see what
I know. And I just, you know, I did like, so I think I stopped in October And then I joined the community through a friend who was on OTI. I think I only used to do your Zoom on a Saturday. That's the only one I could face.
You did. It was good.
I know. And then, and hide in the car so that nobody knew. And I would just think to myself, if I could just do I'll do Sober October. And then I would listen to everybody talking and some of the older members saying, oh, they're or this or whatever and how their lives have changed. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know if they're really making this, I don't get it. I don't get it. But anyway, I'm going to do the month. And then you talk about the 100 days. And then I remember taking a calendar and working out my 100 days. And it was the 27th of January. And I was like, that's not happening. My birthday's the 7th of November and Christmas. There's no way I'm not drinking at Christmas. We restaurant people, we're like food and wine is our life. But then as I listened to the podcast and I thought, I think it's one of you that said 100 days in your life is such a small percentage, So I thought, do you know what? I'll do the 100 days. I'm going to do the 100 days and it's going to be shit and I'm going to hate it. But then I can just tell everybody I've done it and I'll never have to do this ever again. We'll never discuss not drinking ever again. This is a conversation. I'm not having a conversation with anybody else. This is what me and the two Laurens in my head are having a conversation about. So it's like, okay, I'll do the 100 days. And, then I would always listen to your podcasts. And I listened to Susan's podcast, The Believer.
Yes.
And that's the one. That's the podcast that when I listened to her, I thought,
yeah.
Oh, it's brilliant. I've listened to it about 3 times. I listened to it last week again.
It's one of our most popular episodes ever because I think that's exactly what people do. They bank it and they go back to it time and time again.
It's just like when I have a low moment or I'm feeling a bit wobbly, I listen to that podcast. And just the way she spoke and she's, I really connected with her story. It's similar to mine and how she said how hard it was and how she just needed to get to the other side. She just needed to get through it. And I thought, God, I just need to try this. Life's quite hard and I haven't had much luck and I haven't done much for me. Maybe I can do this for me. Maybe I can just to prove to myself that I can do a hard thing. So I did the 100 days and then I thought I'll just go a little bit longer because I'm still not sure. I haven't had this rainbow unicorn moment, but I am feeling a little bit better. So I'm a little bit less angry. And then you had your Snowden event. And then I looked at the dates again on the calendar and I was like, oh, that takes me to 6 months. I thought, no, I'm not doing that. No, I'm not going to do 6 months.
Still
I can't do that. Summer's
it.
Coming. All the time, every day. fight. And then I don't know what happened. I think it was someone in the community that convinced me to do the mountain. I'm quite fit and I do lots of running and stuff. And I thought the one thing I haven't done is climbed a mountain. So maybe I should do this. And if I do it by myself, I'm going to die. So let me do it with a group where there's somebody who knows what they're doing. So
and
then
you can
I can
then die with us.
I can just die in a group. It'll be fun. They'll make a Netflix documentary about us. It'll be great. and then I got to the 6 months and I did went to Snowden. I never know to call it Snowden or Snowdonia. What's the difference? I
can't, well, we climbed
place?
Snowden in Snowdonia. Yeah, we had our Snowdonia
weekend. Snowden's the mountain. Yes,
yeah,
where
we climbed. Do you remember when we saw the Northern Lights on the way up?
Oh, it was beautiful.
Sunrise at the top. Unbelievable.
I know, and I believe somebody wasn't there.
Beers?
Missed the whole thing.
Do you remember the people
I was
at the
in
top?
Hospital.
No, we don't talk about that. Do you remember at 6 o'clock in the morning, the people drinking beers on top of Snowden? Watching the sunrise
and
their
bottles of I had a nice cup of tea.
Yeah. Which I know exactly what I prefer.
Yeah. And then that weekend was a very strange weekend for me because I met all these people that I'd met on the Zoom. And I think in my heart, I knew that weekend was like there were two paths in front of me. And I either had to pick the alcohol-free path or go back to my old life. And the alcohol-free path was just, I wasn't sure about it, but I definitely didn't want to go back to my old life. And I knew there wasn't a middle. So after like coming back and having a small tantrum and a little bit of a meltdown, because I was like confronted by all of this, and I thought, oh, but you know, like I kind of like boxed the two things. I took my old life with all my friends and all my family, and I kind of put them on that path. And then I just had my alcohol-free, like I'm trying to explain how my brain works. It's a bit complicated. And I was looking down this alcohol-free life, and I just thought, oh, but I don't want to just be with these people from OTI, because I've got friends, you know, and I've got family. Do I have to now leave them to do this alcohol-free life? And I didn't like that. I felt like my brain was forcing me in very black and white. I didn't think there could be like a grey.
Where in the terms and conditions does it say that you have to leave everyone that you know and love behind you?
Exactly. No, but that's just my brain. You know, it's going, you know, I came on a Zoom, and I think I want to say it was Neil's Zoom, and I wasn't going to say anything because I thought these people are going to think I'm crazy, because now I've just spent a weekend with them and now I'm going to tell them I didn't really enjoy it because I had all these confronting emotions and I'm not sure if I want to be friends with them, which is like a very basic way of putting it. It's quite difficult to articulate. And old wise Neil, he just set me right. And he was like, exactly what you just said. Like, why do you have to like leave everybody else? And, you know, it's not that black and white. You're overthinking it. And so I sat with it a bit, and then I sat with it for a while, about a month, but just a little bit over a month, and still went on the Zooms, still wasn't drinking, because I thought I can't, you know, I really felt, for me, like sometimes I get the impression that people just morph into it, you know, that they just stop drinking and then everything just goes well and they just kind of go with it.
No.
For me, that's just how my impression. And for me, at that point, I was like, I have to choose. It has to be a choice and I have to choose. And I was so terrified that if I chose this path, that I would lose everybody that's sitting on the other side. Mm. And so I just sat with it a bit, because actually sometimes you don't have to do anything, even though not making a choice is a choice. And then suddenly, like around a 7-month mark, like something just shifted within me. It's very difficult to explain. And I suddenly felt like really happy with myself and like confident and really comfortable. I think the first 6 months for me, I was really raw and like I felt on edge, and I felt like I was like, when you get a new sweater and it's like doesn't sit right. It wasn't comfortable. I was uncomfortable all the time. And then suddenly I started to shift into being more comfortable. I stopped thinking about it so much. I got quite confident about it. I started sharing it with more people, and I got such amazing support from people, you know, people that I thought, like friends of mine who are big drinkers, were just like, that's amazing. Let's go watch a movie. You know, so actually all the things I was worried about, I didn't have to, because my friends were still there, you know. But in the beginning, I sort of withdrew a bit because I felt uncomfortable and I didn't trust myself. But when I got to 7 months, 8 months, I kind of trusted myself again, and I just had to believe that everybody would support me, and they did.
Lauren.
And so here I am.
Listening to that whole thing there, like you have just completely described why Over the Influence exists. I remember having a conversation ages ago with somebody who just couldn't get their head around OTI and what it was and who it was for, because they were like, well, but you know, what about, you got AA, people have got AA, like why do you need Over the Influence? And what you've described is that you're a habitual drinker, but not necessarily a dependent drinker, but just how long the process can be, how much questioning goes on. That's why we exist, because
exactly.
Well, I'm hoping that you're going to very honestly tell us. You've told us very honestly about all the shit stuff. I'm hoping that you're going to very honestly tell us about the good stuff about alcohol-free life now.
Everything crossed.
But you know, but that's why we're here. It's for exactly that. You know, we're not dragging people into it. Like, we're giving people the opportunity to explore these things. And you could have come to that Snowden weekend, and actually, you could have gone down the other path again and gone, no, yeah. And, you know, and we wouldn't have been on your back about it. It's, you know, that's, you're an adult, you make your own decisions. I'm so glad you made the choice to carry on the alcohol-free life and go down that path. But I just, you know, thank you for talking us through that, because I think that's exactly it. That's why we exist. That's why we're here. That's who we're for. We're for people who want to make the choice to be alcohol free, but actually need that bit of reassurance, need that kind of, you know, looking ahead to the future, need those. I need to believe those people talking about Susan McGarry and that fabulous line from that episode, you know.
I would never have been able to do it just like on my own. You need to surround yourself with people that are, and I think the thing is, like, with my background, people that, you know, my dad used to always say, never trust anyone that doesn't drink, you know, so I have that in my head sometimes. But, you know, so my thing of sober people is like, they're boring, they're dull, they're goody two shoes. It's a bit like being back in high school. There's the popular kids and the nerds. I don't want to be with the nerds.
Yeah, totally.
Turns out I do. Do you know what I mean? And then actually I met them and I got to know them and I heard all their stories and heard about the things that they do and how rich their lives are and how full their lives are and how I've never met so many people that like themselves. Do you know what I mean? They all really value themselves and they're all different.
Not
and
arrogantly, I think that's why is it? All, it's not an arrogant kind
no,
of
no, no,
know,
no,
look
no.
At
it's
me.
Not an arrogant
not a preachy.
Thing. It's no, no, it's and that's the thing is it's not preachy. You know, if let me tell you, if someone tells me not to do something, I'm doing the something because that's just the way I am. You know, the same as like when someone tells me you can't do something, I'm like, watch me.
Somebody told me, Lauren, at the beginning when I started out doing this.
I love
you know,
that.
You'll not stop drinking. You
like,
can't do this. You won't do this. And I went, well, just hold my wine for 90 days and watch me. And it fires you up.
It does fire you up. But I just, and the thing is that the people are just so supportive. They're not judgmental. They give you lovely advice, but it's a fun place, you know, because I was so worried that I gave up drinking and then I'd be boring. I have nothing to say. I wouldn't be able to talk. I wouldn't be funny. I wouldn't be fun. You know, I thought I'd just morph into this sort of insipid person. And that's the complete opposite of what's happened. I've never been busier. I've never done more things, you know. I do loads of stuff with my kids. I'm funny. I laugh. I've got loads of new friends, you know, and not only OTI. It's not like I just gave up my life and then just made all my OTI friends and that's what I've done now. Not at all. I've still got all my lovely friends that I have here and who are all amazing and supportive, but I've made new friends. You know, the sad thing is I would never have made friends with people that don't drink. You know, I would have like, if I met someone and they said, oh no, I don't drink. I wouldn't have developed the friendship because I was like, oh, well, they're not going to have a glass of wine. They're going to be loads of fun, you know? And I've made some amazing friends, like from work and that who are non-drinkers, who I've developed the most amazing friendships with, who have been so supportive, who've been so amazing. It's just opened up my whole world, you know? And I think a lot of times when you drink all the time or a lot of the time, you can't do anything without alcohol. So the idea of going to like the movies or picnic or a walk and not having like a little gin and tonic in a can in a bag or where we're going to have wine, when we're going to stop for a drink, it's just such peace and freedom. That's exactly what I got after 7 months. Suddenly I thought, I don't feel like manic all the time. I don't feel stressed all the time. I don't feel overwhelmed. I just feel really calm and really peaceful and until somebody, a small person needs me. But, you know, it just, that chatter is all gone, you know, and that's the best part. But it takes time. But it really opens your world. I enjoy things now I never enjoyed before. All the small things, you know, all the little things I would never have taken notice of, you know, like I wouldn't have watched. Like today, I've sat and watched movies with my girls and that would have annoyed me because I've been, oh God, it's nearly 5 o'clock. I wonder if I can have a glass of wine, you know? Well, I've not even like noticed the time. We've had a big pot of tea. We've had custard creams. I don't think about it. I got my evenings back, you know, evenings were war zone time, you know, and I hated the evenings, especially when I wasn't drinking, like when I stopped, because that was like worrying about, oh, I really would fancy a glass of wine. Now I can't have one. This is really shitty. And now I don't even notice the time. I do loads of stuff in the evening. I'm busy. It's just, I just, to anybody who's struggling, they should just do the 100 days, get an OTI, bitch and whinge and whine, and you'll be fine.
We should put that on the posters.
Bitch and whinge and whine.
And you'll be fine. Yeah, yeah.
And then you'll be fine.
I've got two questions that I want to ask you. The first one is, when we started at the beginning of this episode, you said that, you know, one of the reasons that you drank was because you felt invisible in this chaotic life. Me and Ben, when you were speaking then, we both were just sat back and we were both just listening to your every word. We didn't need to say anything. It was just glorious to hear it. And my takeaway from what you've just shared there is that you have never been more visible in your life. Do you feel that?
Yes, that's exactly how I feel like I'm relevant. Do you know, I feel like I'm important, that I have value, that I've got something to give. And even with my children, you know, like when you don't feel good about yourself, you, especially when you have kids, it's almost like they can sense that. And they don't always treat you as well. It's difficult to put into words, but they don't just respond. Treat's not the right word. They don't always respond to you as well. But now, because I've got this inner confidence and like, I like myself and I'm sure of myself, you know, I have conversations with my children and they actually listen to me. They value what I say, especially my big girls. You know, they've been my biggest cheerleaders. They've really supported me so much. And they're super proud. And they, I think that the thing I've showed my kids is that we can do hard things. You know, and life can be shitty and it can be stressful and unfair. I get that all the time. It's so unfair. Like, yeah, we know, we're all living it, you know, but the thing that I hope I can show them is that, you know, even though life gives you a curveball, whatever, you do the right thing for yourself and the rest will just come, you know, hopefully. Hopefully they don't come back and say, well, you said, and now this has happened. Yeah. So yeah, I don't feel invisible. I'm definitely not invisible anymore. And you're actually one of my friends, I can't remember which milestone it was, because when I first stopped drinking, I didn't really tell anybody. I had a very small group of friends that knew. And one of my friends, she just sent me a message and said, I see you. I know. And that was amazing. The last thing. Yeah. I'm not supposed to cry because that's just stupid.
No, it's not. It's phenomenal. And your honesty will strike a chord, Lauren, with so many people listening to this. It's unreal. It absolutely will. I want to finish by saying to you, you'll laugh at this, I want to take you back to those, you know, early Zoom calls when it was rotten and it was tough and it was shit. I just want to say, I didn't want to say I told you so, Lauren.
I think you actually have said that to me.
I know. Haven't got loads of time left, but can I ask Lauren one more question? And Lauren, I do realise that I'm asking a lot of you here because I'm asking you to speak on behalf of an entire nation, your mother nation. Why is no one listening to us in South Africa? Is it us or is it them?
No, I think they don't know about you. I think
is there an alcohol-free movement?
Not that I'm very aware of. Because I've been here a long time, since 2011.
Well, true. Yeah.
I always laugh at people on the podcast and they go, oh, the drinking culture in the UK. And I'm like, listen, my friend, you ain't made drinkers until you've been to South Africa. we like our alcohol. I probably get lynched for this, but it is like a sport. You know, people, they love their brandy. It's wine country. We have the most beautiful wines. And I'm not slamming that because there are people out there that can have a glass of wine and enjoy it with their meal. I just think that as a nation, you know, we drink a lot and it's kind of like almost an expat thing. You know, you have your gin and tonic on the veranda watching the sunset, your beers round the braai, your wine with your dinner. It's so part of life. I can't think of anybody growing up, anybody's family that I would visit who didn't drink, whose parents didn't drink. I can't think of anybody in my family. I can't think of anybody that doesn't drink. You know, it's just, I think it's just a culture thing. And I think it probably is changing, because I know there are people that struggle with it. I mean, there has to be. And also, you know, I've worked in restaurants and pubs and things. I saw it loads of times, you know. There is definitely a big drinking culture in South Africa. And I think you're nicer in this country in terms of accepting people not drinking and being sober. But as I say, I haven't been home for a long time, so that might have changed.
Yeah, I feel like there's a trip coming up here, Shaz. I mean, it's a business trip. We've got to put on expenses.
Maybe
we should go to Cape Town. I think Cape Town, because we've got Table Mountain there, so we can do a bit of,
we could do a climb. Yeah, we could do that.
We could do a bit of ATI
climbing.
You
know, I'm sitting here in my boiler room, listen to this, with my rickety chair that's falling to bits, and he's on about bloody nobbing off to South Africa.
Okay, Maybe we're not quite there yet. But we should spread the word over there. We should.
You should. Although, I think people would connect with it, you know. They would definitely. I know there's lots of women like me in South Africa who's struggling like I did and who think, well, everybody drinks, so can I. And I just need to be more in control. I just need to be like more grown up and just have two glasses or just have one glass. And I think it's a really quiet problem that nobody talks about. I know it is. I can think of loads of people off the top of my head who I know are in the same position as me, but it's not something that's spoken about or discussed, in my opinion, you know.
Well, this episode, Lauren, it might be the one to change it in South Africa. Like, literally, who knows? It's been amazing. And like, I think I can speak on behalf of, you know, Ben here as well, personally, for us to be part of your journey, to see where you were, angry Lauren,
you know,
nearly a year and a half ago to today, being a guest on the Over the Influence podcast. And we've not got time to talk about it because we're literally out of time. You now Zoom with our community. You are giving back to people coming in now who can come in and go, Lauren, do you mind me saying it's shit? And you'll be like, yeah, I know it is.
I know, put your big girl pants on, you'll be fine.
Come on, it's going to be all right. It's been wonderful, and we see you as well, and it's just amazing. So, Lauren, thank you.
Well, I can't thank you guys enough. Thank you very much.